Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, today we're going to talk about what's going on right now. And that is what's really happening with this fiscal stimulus negotiations. I mean, it's becoming a circus, isn't it? You know, let's talk about what's happened the past week, what may be happening today. But I also want to go back and put it in a little bit of a historical perspective here. We need to understand what's been going on since July, August. And even more so before that, going back to the CARES Act. It's all one event, really. But we'll start with the present, and we'll move our way backwards. And then I want to conclude a little bit on the show, what time is left, on how bad the U.S. economy really is. You're going to hear a lot of hype about GDP in another week as the preliminary numbers come out for third quarter GDP. But GDP is not a good indicator, and I'll explain why, about what's really going on in this economy. So at the end of the show, I do want to give you an outlook about what's really happening with jobs, with business closures, with evictions, certain industries that are really, really in a deep depression. Certain industries are worse than they were in the 1930s, and they're not coming out of it, you see. Do we have a W shape, a V shape, a K shape? What the hell is that? All right, so we'll finish up the show talking about the real economic scenario. But before that, I want to talk about the solution to dealing with the economic scenario, which is a fiscal stimulus, which, of course, we don't have. The CARES Act in March was not a fiscal stimulus. It was a fiscal mitigation. And even that was not fully used because of the way it was composed. I'll explain what that is. And since July, the House has been bickering, Pelosi Schumer, been bickering with the Trump administration to try to get a real fiscal stimulus bill that would be needed not just to put a floor under the collapse, which was what the CARES Act was last March, and that was played out, you know, by July. That was gone. And it did help. It did help. I mean, as bad as the second quarter was, it would have been much, much worse without the CARES Act, at least the part of the CARES Act that provided unemployment insurance, checks, bailout of small businesses, some of them, it would have been much worse. But it was just a mitigation bill, meaning, you know, put a floor under this thing so it wouldn't be as bad. And then we'll get together and really provide a new stimulus. You know, the CARES Act did not stimulate the economy. It prevented it from going lower. Now you needed a real stimulus in the second half, fiscal stimulus, meaning a government spending stimulus, not a tax cut fiscal stimulus, because tax cuts only get hoarded by businesses and investors or sent offshore, or the money goes into financial asset markets by companies. They don't expand. Okay. So now they've been talking about a fiscal stimulus since July, and nothing's happened. Why? Well, that's the key thing to explain, isn't it? Especially this past week. Now, let's look at what happened this past week. After 3 months of no agreement, Trump says to his negotiator, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, he says to him, look, get me a deal, which is kind of like, all right, maybe I'll negotiate, right? Maybe I'll move. You're going to get a deal. You're not going to go into negotiations and not move on your position, are you? No, get a deal means, okay, let's negotiate. So Mnuchin meets with Nancy Pelosi and Schumer behind the scenes, quietly. And they make some progress. Exactly what is not clear because it was all behind closed doors, but, you know, it leaks out and you kind of get a sense that, okay, Pelosi was at $2.2 trillion and Mnuchin was at $1.6 trillion. You know, Pelosi had come down from $3.4 trillion, which was the original HEROES Act, passed, by the way, way back in late May, when it was obvious the CARES Act was being spent. Yeah, they were ready to stimulate the economy. Look, I'm not a big fan of Democrats, but give credit where credit's due. It wasn't a bad bill. You know, they were ready back there at the end of May. So Pelosi came down from 3.4 to 2.2. And Mnuchin came up from 1.5 to 1.6. You see, when you start in July, you have the HEROES Act, which is $3.4 trillion of stimulus, and you have the Senate's version that the Senate threw out called the HEALS Act, H-E-A-L-S, HEALS Act, all right? And that was about $1 trillion. But it was clear in July that McConnell couldn't deliver even the $1 trillion, because once he proposed it in the HEALS Act, he had an insurrection of his right wing, you know, Rand Paul-led insurrection among the Senate Republicans saying, no, we can't agree to $1 trillion because, you know, $1 trillion is going to ruin the budget deficit. You know, same guys didn't say anything about the $4.5 trillion tax cut messing up the budget deficit back in 2018, Trump's tax cut. Oh, they didn't say anything about it then. Or they don't say anything about the hundreds of billions of dollars of extra spending, you know, on defense and war. Oh, they don't. That's okay. You know, but when it comes to trying to bail out you know, families and workers and small businesses, oh, it's too much, it's going to ruin the deficit, right? So he had an insurrection back in July. And he knew McConnell, knew he couldn't get anything passed, right? Let alone a HEROES bill of $3.4 trillion, right? He knew that. And he backed off. McConnell backed off. And threw the hot potato, you know, into the hands of the administration and Mnuchin, said, you guys do it, full knowing that he would never be able to deliver for the rest of this year, he, McConnell, anything reasonable in terms of a stimulus bill. He knew that. So the HEALS Act versus the HEROES Act in July was where the both parties negotiating were. Now, what's happened this past week is that Trump tells Mnuchin, you know, go negotiate something, full knowing that he can't get it through the Senate, but he looks bad, Trump, if he doesn't propose something in an election last month to the American people. He looks like he's holding it up. So he tells Mnuchin, go do it. Then he goes into the hospital, which is another story, you know. You know, was that theater or what the hell was that? Okay. So he goes into the hospital and Mnuchin and Pelosi negotiate. Mnuchin goes up to $1.6 trillion, you know, and Nancy, who's at $2.2 trillion now, because she dropped back in August from 3.4 to 2.2, by the way. We'll talk about that. We'll backtrack on that. But as of last week, the Democrats are at $2.2 trillion. Republicans are Mnuchin at $1.6 trillion. Okay, so there's $600 billion apart. You know, okay, you know, I think the magic number is $2 trillion or $1.9 to get a deal between Mnuchin and Pelosi. But remember, you got to get through the Senate, which wasn't even willing to go for $1 trillion. Okay, so Trump's in the hospital, and the parties negotiate 2.2 to 1.6. Trump comes out of the hospital pissed off. Oh, I don't like it. You know, you come up and, you know, we're still too far apart and so forth. I'm breaking off negotiations. He announces no deal, no negotiations until after November. Whoa, bad political move. I'm sure White House phones were ringing off the wall. Complaints from chambers of commerce's, airlines, CEOs, business roundtable, and all the rest saying, what the hell you doing, Donald? We need a stimulus now. If we don't get a stimulus, can't you see what's happening to your stock market? You know, it's wobbling. Every time it looks like there's negotiations, it goes up. Every time it looks like there isn't, it goes down. Clearly, the markets are keying on the stimulus. Oh, so then Trump reverses himself again, a second time, and says, oh, you know, I want a stimulus bill. I want a comprehensive bill. You know, before he said that, a couple of days, well, yesterday, I think it was, before he said that, his position was, after all these business calls come in, see, his position was, okay, Nancy Pelosi, let's negotiate item by item. Hmm? After he says no deal until after November, then he comes back over the weekend and he says item by item, let's negotiate item by item. Well, you know, that's a fool's move. You know, what that means is let's have a bill for the airlines, and let's have a bill for $1,200 checks, and let's have a bill for small businesses. Give me separate bills, Nancy, and I'll consider them. Well, all that means is he's just going to cherry pick the ones he wants and throw out the ones he doesn't want. I mean, even the Democrats can see through that one. And of course, Pelosi said, no, we're not going to do that. And the airlines started laying off workers, right? Putting pressure. Yeah. So he couldn't get her to negotiate item by item. So yesterday, like last night, I think it was, he says, okay, I'm for a comprehensive bill now. Steve, go back in and negotiate with Nancy here on a comprehensive bill. And the latest I heard this morning was Mnuchin raised his offer to $1.8 trillion from $1.6. And Nancy, intimated here a couple of days ago that my 2.2 is really $2 trillion. So where are they at? Where are the negotiators at? They're at 1.8, Mnuchin, really, 2.0, Pelosi, $2 trillion. Which is where Pelosi was back in August, you see. If they agree on $2 trillion, they could have had that $2 trillion deal in August. But in August, Trump scuttled the negotiations. We've talked about that on this show, and it's probably worth reiterating in a summary here of negotiations since July, which I'll get to. But then he scuttled it again here last week, right? When he said, nah, nothing until after November. Twice he's intervened and scuttled it. And twice he backs off. I mean, how could you trust a negotiator in a guy like that, right? Because that's the way he negotiates, you see. That's Trump's business modus operandi. In other words, you sit down, you give all glowing accounts of how much you like the other guy. You sit down at negotiations. You make unreasonable demands after you signal you're willing to agree. And then you break off negotiations. When the other side made a significant offer and you don't do it, you break off negotiations. You walk away and you wait until they ask you to come back. And you come back and then you start negotiating over again and repeat. Do it again and again. Well, that's bad faith bargaining. You know, I negotiate a lot of contracts when I was in the unions, and if somebody had done that to me, I would have walked out of there, you know, told the workers to go on strike, and now let's negotiate. Okay, Democrats don't do it that way. But that's how Trump gets away with that shit. Right? That's the way he negotiates. On again, off again, on again, and off again. Well, I wouldn't trust him. So anyway, today we're back at 1.8 for the Republicans and 2.2, really 2.0 for the Democrats. They're only $200 billion apart. They could easily agree on 1.9, and then both of them lie, one saying, oh, it's really 2.0, and the other saying it's really 1.8. You know, that's how that's done. They could do that. There's a tentative agreement there. But they won't get it, at least not right away. And not really. I mean, the odds are against a deal, even that close. Why? Don't forget the situation in the Senate. McConnell can't deliver. And he's not going to sit on his right wing, Rand Paul right wing in the Senate, this close to the election, and force them into an agreement. He's not going to do it. The thing's going to die in the Senate, I predict, until after elections. I don't even know what the hell they're going to do in a lame duck. The economy may be so bad that businesses, CEOs, and others will put so much pressure on these guys, they'll have to do something. If they don't, they don't get campaign contributions next time around. Okay. So why is Trump vacillating so much? Well, there's several possible reasons. One, I think, is just ego. Trump likes to be the big decider, you know, the art of the deal. He must see himself as the one who closed the deal. He wants his constituents, his red state buddies, to recognize, I'm the one who delivered it for you. He can't stand anyone else sharing the results of the deal. He can't stand Pelosi and Democrats getting some credit. I think that's one thing that's behind his vacillations, right? Another is he may just be panicking now because of the election and it looks like the popular vote is going against him. That doesn't mean electoral vote will, electoral college, you know, but he must be a little worried, on again, off again. But I think the real reason here is the Senate situation. You know, he's between a rock and a hard place. If he doesn't propose and look like he's trying to get a comprehensive bill, right, that hurts him election-wise. Looks like he can't cut a deal. Looks like he's unstable, vacillating all the time. And it lets the Senate Republicans off the hook, right? On the other hand, if he says, okay, and we got a deal, subject now only to the Senate, well, that puts McConnell and Rand Paul behind the eight ball, doesn't it? They don't look like they're the ones who are preventing a deal. Trump now, he's for a deal. Mnuchin, his buddy, negotiated, came to a conclusion here with Pelosi, Schumer, right? Okay, so Trump, gets the monkey off his back, but he throws it on the back of McConnell and the Senate, Republican Senate. And, he doesn't want to do that. Trump really doesn't want to put the Senate between a rock and a hard place, the Republicans in the Senate, because he wants them to move quickly and okay his Supreme Court nomination before the election, which is critical to his plan B. So he's got a dilemma, doesn't he? He looks like he's the one who can't deliver, which hurts him. Or the Senate, Republicans look like they're the ones who can't deliver, which hurts him too. Who knows, the revolt, you know, or just the stalling. If this bill gets in, comprehensive fiscal bill gets in the Senate and they go round and round and round, you know, it makes it harder to bring up the vote for the nomination of Amy Barrett, right? His Supreme Court pick. Oh, I'm sure somehow McConnell could squeeze it in because he's just railroading the whole damn thing. But it'll be difficult, But who's got the monkey on their back? Trump or McConnell in this whole thing? McConnell's been able to avoid it all since July, when it was pretty clear, you know, his Rand Paul faction was mutinying here on him. He couldn't get it, so he threw the hot potato back into the administration. That was in July. Oh, well, what happened in August? Well, once again, Mnuchin and Pelosi were negotiating towards an agreement. They're only $500 billion apart. You know, Pelosi had reduced her position by over $1 trillion from $3.4 trillion in the HEROES bill to $2 trillion. She put that on the table. And that's when Trump walked out. You got his guy Meadows, Mark Meadows, who had taken over the lead of the negotiations from Mnuchin, stomped out, didn't make a counteroffer after he signaled to Pelosi, oh, we have an agreement problem if you'll come down to $2 trillion. So Pelosi comes down to $2 trillion, gets sandbagged, as we call it in negotiations, gets sandbagged, and Republican Trump Meadows walk out on her. Whoa, you do that to me once. Boy, am I going to trust you? No. So that's where they were in August, you see. $2 trillion and $1.5 trillion. They could have got the difference. They could have come to an agreement. But Trump didn't want an agreement. Why? Because that would have meant that the Democrats were sharing, the kudos here for getting a deal. He doesn't want them to share it. He wants to be the one that delivers to everybody. Oh, I cut the deal, right? That's why he took it out of the hands of Mnuchin Pelosi. And what did he do? Immediately after he scuttled that agreement, immediately after, he announces his four executive orders, those phony four, as I call them. What were they? Oh, well, one was we're going to give $300 more a week supplemental unemployment benefits. We were giving $600 a week, you see, that kept everybody from being evicted from their rents and making their payments on their mortgages, right? Being able to survive under, that was a CARES Act provision, the $600 additional, on top of whatever the state unemployment benefit was that you were getting. That kept the whole thing from collapsing for 3 months. Oh, but that ran out at the end of July. So Trump's first executive order was, instead of 600, you get 300. Now, he did that unilaterally, you see, without congressional agreement. And according to the Constitution, these money bills have to be agreed to by the House of Representatives. That's what the Constitution says. Yeah. Well, he just unilaterally ran roughshod over that constitutional provision and said, oh, I'm going to provide $300. And where was he going to get it? Well, Congress didn't authorize it. He was going to take it from another pot called the Disaster Relief Fund. That had about 50-some billion in it for the hurricanes and the fires. And by the way, boy, we got the hurricanes. We ran out of names, didn't we? We ran out of the alphabet. Now we're using the Greek alphabet. There's so many of them coming. Climate warming. And then the Western fires, not just California, but everywhere across the West. Yeah. Well, the relief fund was supposed to be for that. He took it. He took the money off the relief fund to give $300, half of the $600, checks to the unemployed. But only in those states where the states would agree to throw in another $100 themselves. And not all states were doing that because most of them were broke in terms of their unemployment fund. But anyway, some people started getting that. But it ran out after 6 weeks, you see. So by the end of September, that was gone. You know, the disaster relief fund had been bled dry. Another constitutional challenge here to the House You know, he did the same thing with his wall, took money out of, one pot, put it in another pot to build his wall. He's been violating the Constitution in terms of that spending authorization here for the last couple of years. Well, I mean, the Constitution doesn't mean anything to this guy. So, you know, that executive order, $300, that's dissipated. That's gone. No effect on the economy. No effect. No stimulus effect. By the way, it wasn't a stimulus. Because when you took out the $600 extra a month, you took out $65 billion out of the economy, not counting the multiplier effect. You know, money put into the economy, government spending gets spent more than once. That's what economists call the multiplier effect, which is about two, multiplier of two when you talk about unemployment benefits spending. So it took out $130 billion out of the economy when the $600 from the CARES Act was allowed to expire. Oh, and he put $300 back in some states. Right. So, you know, about $100 billion net here taken out of the economy in August, $100 billion taken out of the economy, well, more of it probably in September. No net effect, you see, for that executive order. What about Executive Order 2? Well, that was even crazier. That's the payroll tax cut. Actually, it's not a cut. It's just a deferral, you see. His executive order allowed companies to defer the payroll tax for workers because companies had already deferred, given the right to defer their share. You see, companies pay half payroll tax, workers pay half. They already had the right of deferral since March in the CARES Act. But deferral means you got to pay it back. So companies who deferred their share of the payroll tax will have to put it back next year. By the end of 2021. Now, if you defer payroll taxes for the worker share, the workers are going to have to put it back, which means next year they get taxed double. Double payroll taxes. But there's another hitch here, and that is the companies are liable legally for transferring the payroll tax for the workers that they take out of the workers' paycheck to the government. So in effect, you know, if the companies cut it, in other words, allow their workers not to pay the payroll tax now, and defer it, you know, then the companies might have to come up with the worker share of the payroll tax deferral that has to be repaid next year. So in other words, instead of the companies paying double payroll tax, in other words, that which was deferred now and which will be required next year, they may have to pay triple payroll tax. So a lot of them are not doing it. No, Trump went around and said, well, if I'm elected, I'm going to make that payroll tax permanent. Right? You won't have to pay back the deferral, either for you, your share business, or for your workers. Yeah, but look, that takes congressional approval, too. If the Constitution still holds, he can't do that unilaterally. He wants to. He wants to rule without the legislature. That's called dictator. Yeah. So it's a mess. It's a mess. Plus, you know, even deferral of the payroll tax, which funds Social Security and Medicare, is going to cause a problem, Social Security and Medicare. But they don't care about that because they want it to look like it's going broke so they can cut the benefits instead of putting the money back. So what a mess. What a can of worms that whole payroll tax cut deferral executive order is. And then the other two were even phonier. The third executive order was, evictions. The states can do something if they want. I'm recommending the states do something. Well, hell, the red states aren't going to do a damn thing about evictions. And some of the blue states, too. No. evictions are occurring, you know. We got millions occurring right as we talk right now. And estimates are that, you know, you're looking at 20, some estimates, 40 million people. How many people are in rents? 108 million Americans are renters. 48 million rental units out there. 108 million renters. So you're looking at, you know, 40 million, roughly 40% can be evicted over the next year. But the evictions are starting now. Actually, they were starting in the summer, you know, because some states, they just ignored the rent moratorium in the CARES Act. Some governors. Yeah. So evictions are going on. The third executive order was just phony. And then the fourth was, we can extend students paying a moratorium on their debt, their student debt, $1.7 trillion total out there, a moratorium on the payments. Now, let me tell you what a moratorium means. It doesn't mean that students won't have to pay the back non-payments, kind of like deferral of tax, payroll tax, you know. They're going to have to pay that. And I'll tell you what else happens with deferrals, forbearance, or whatever you want to call it, and student debt. It means that the interest on what you didn't pay keeps rising as well. And what that means, and the interest, by the way, is outrageous. It's like 6%. You know, the Federal Reserve will loan 10-year treasuries to businesses at 0.70% charge. So if you're a business, you can buy U.S. treasuries and pay only, you know, 0.7% interest on it. But if you're a student, you know, you pay 6%, 6.8% interest on government debt that you borrow. And if you got a forbearance since March, you know, not only the principal of those payments that didn't occur, but the interest on those payments continues to accumulate. Now, it's even worse, because when you start paying again, you got to pay up. Your total payment goes towards that interest, which is already high at 6.8%, right? It goes towards that interest first, all of it. In other words, you just pay an interest, and you're not paying down your principal, your total debt. I mean, that is so outrageous. You know, not only the fact that students got to pay so much for a government loan, but the fact is that they get double whacked and they got to pay back all the interest, which means they're paying forever. They're indentured. This is a form of indentureship. Yeah, which is kind of like a light form of slavery. That's the student loan situation. He said, oh, okay, you can go 3 more months. Well, students aren't paying for it anyway. Workers who are now working, where students can't afford to pay for it anyway. They don't have no job, most of them. So, you know, give them 3 months where their interest accrues even more. Is not a solution for them. It's just bottling up the problem, making it worse down the road. Those were the four executive orders. The payroll tax cut, the $300 supplemental unemployment benefits, you know, the deferral of student education debt payments, right? And the recommendation of evictions. Well, that was all bullshit, to put it politely. You know, had nothing to do with stimulating the economy. It was just a cover by Trump. And then, of course, all we did in September was back and forth in discussions. Nothing really happening in December. I mean, in September, between Mnuchin and Pelosi. Trump trying to get Pelosi to agree to this line by line negotiation, Pelosi saying, no, we're not falling for that. You already sandbagged us once. We don't trust you. And then the economy starts looking worse in September. Actually starts in August, September. You know, we got no stimulus. The CARES Act mitigation wears out, at least for workers and small businesses. And now there's no fiscal stimulus going on throughout September. But now it's finally becoming obvious that the economy is not doing so well. And, oh, the stock markets are beginning to say, look, you know, there's got to be some sort of fiscal stimulus or, you know, we're going to go south. And, you know, that's all Trump cares about. He thinks the economy is the stock market. Well, that's the way these big financial speculators say it. Yeah, for them it is. That's where they make most of their profits, is financial speculation. So, you know, that's the economy for them. Jobs? Oh, that's the economy for the rest of us. Well, housing? Oh, that's for the rest of us. Healthcare? That's for the rest of us. So nothing happened in September, and then we get to this fiasco of the last week, you know. Trump flip-flopping four or five times now. Because he's caught between, once again, worth repeating, he's caught between knowing that he can't get it through the Senate and he doesn't want to make the Senate look bad because he needs the Senate to protect him and to pass, you know, the Supreme Court nomination. He doesn't want his buddy Mitch McConnell to have to really deal with a tough situation there. You know, that's what you got on the other hand. And, you know, on the other hand, he's got the economy weakening, and it looks like he's the one who's preventing it. You know, he really stuck his foot in his mouth when he said, you know, I'm cutting off negotiations, I'm scuttling this, and nothing until after November. Whoa, what a dumb move. You know, think about it. We're lucky we got Trump. I mean, he's got such a big mouth and such a big ego that he keeps sticking his foot in his mouth. Just think if he wasn't so stupid, if he was much more clever, how dangerous he would really be. Think about that. Yeah, I mean, the convergence of forces and conditions here, you know, with this right wing being mobilized. Look, you probably, let me digress, you probably heard about what's going on in Michigan, right? Right, the Michigan Wolverines, or whatever the hell they're called. Actually trying to invade the Michigan State House, their legislature, and kidnap the governor, you know, doing all that shit. And these are the guys that Trump thinks are okay. Yeah, well, he's giving them dog whistle after dog whistle, right? And they're acting on it. They're preparing on it. You don't think they got something up their sleeve come November 4th? Well, you're pretty naive if you don't. I don't think, and I've been saying, I don't think it's beyond the possibility that when Trump refuses to leave office, that he's going to ask you know, the Wolverines and all the other Wolverines, Proud Boys and all those other crazies, to come down and defend the White House. Oh, bring your AR-15s, guys. Yeah, I mean, that's quite possible. That's how crazy things have gotten. Yeah, who's going to remove them? The police, the local police? I don't think so. The Pentagon says they're not getting involved, so, you know, so much for the Army. What do you think? He's going to call on Department of Homeland Security SWAT teams? No. Oh, you know, Nancy and Schumer are going to rant and rave and declare this and pass that. But they have no executive arm to do it. Now, if Trump loses by a massive amount, a massive vote here, it's going to be harder for him to pull off getting local courts, where McConnell has given him judges, local federal district appeals courts, you know, to stop the mail-in vote count. But that's what he's trying to do, you see? Polls show that Republicans are going to turn out in large. So it may look, it may really look. Oop, I think we have a network connection problem. Oop, do we have a connection here, PRN? Oh, we're good. We're good. Okay, we're back. Maybe we never left, but I had a signal here that said connection. Maybe somebody didn't like what I was saying. I don't know. Anyway, you know, Trump's plan B is to stop the mail-in votes, vote counting, using legal action, using pro-Trump judges in places, and then to get the Supreme Court, which will have a 6-3 majority now with the new Barrett appointment, to agree. To agree. You know, remember, we did that. That's what happened back in 2000. Supreme Court stopped the vote count or recount in Florida. Yeah. Or an alternative of this plan B, you know, maybe in those swing states where you have Republican legislatures, like Wisconsin and so forth, to go directly to the legislatures and say, look, all this mail-in voting is a fraud, and it's, you know, you will never know what's going to go on here. There's no time to count all the mail-in ballots, whether they're legal or not, in time for the electors from the Electoral College to cast their vote for the president. So, look, Republican state legislatures, you know, this is Trump's lawyers talking, what we want you to do is we want you to select the electors. You, not the people, the legislature to select the electors. And that's how he gets some of those swing states, you see. That way the Supreme Court doesn't have to come out blatantly and say, okay, stop the vote. But the Supreme Court will endorse that, allowing the state legislatures to select the electors. This is not beyond the realm of possibility, folks. No. There's already talk, I hear, of Republican lawyers, Trump lawyers, planning to actually do that in certain states, to declare legally that the mail-in ballots is such a mess that there's no time, the legislatures must select electors. That's a little bit different twist than what happened in Florida in 2000. You know, Florida in 2000, the Supreme Court came out directly and stopped the recount, in effect selecting George W. Bush. I don't think Chief Justice Roberts really wants to do that. Boy, that'll really make it clear what side the Supreme Court is on. But, you know, it's easier to accept supporting state legislatures deciding they're going to select the electors. You see, this is what the Electoral College was created for, situations just like this. You know, before we had a constitutional amendment, that's exactly how state legislatures selected the senators, the U.S. senators. They were selected this way. Well, they're going to select the president maybe this way. Anyway, all that's plan B, you see, plan B. There may even be a plan C, you see. If Trump loses so overwhelmingly that even plan B looks like it's hard to implement, plan C is, Trump will get sick again in December and will resign the presidency. Pence will take over and pardon Trump. for everything he's done, taxes and all the rest. Yeah, just like Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. These are games the ruling elite plays. Keeps the system under their control. That's Plan C. Well, that's even more far-fetched, but not impossible. Plan B, very likely, depends on the magnitude of the vote on November 4th. Okay. Plan A, in other words, win this thing by controlling the red states through voter suppression and gerrymandering and all that stuff. That looks less and less likely now. We're somewhere between Plan A and Plan B. Okay. So that's what's coming. And as far as the fiscal stimulus is concerned, Trump is between a rock and a hard place right now. Either he takes the heat, which he doesn't want to do for lack of a stimulus bill, or he throws the hot potato into Mitch McConnell's lap, and Mitch McConnell has to, and the Senate Republicans take the heat, in which if they look bad, if it looks like they're the ones stopping a fiscal stimulus bill, well, then the chances of some of their candidates in the Senate, Republican candidates in the Senate, you know, Collins and some of those, McSally is, I think, in Arizona and so forth, becomes less and less. So it's a difficult political equation for Trump and the Republicans right now. And Nancy's sitting back there and saying, $2 trillion, folks. Steve, $2 trillion. Steve, do you hear me? $2 trillion. Yeah, the ball is in the Republicans' court. And Pelosi just scored a three-pointer here by not falling for Trump's bullshit item-by-item offer. Anyway, that's where we are. And while we're here, you know, the economy is getting worse and worse. I don't care what GDP, preliminary GDP, says. You know, we're going to have another show on what's really in GDP. You know, GDP is not very accurate. For example, did you know that in calculating GDP, what the government does is it counts rent payments that homeowners pay themselves? Yeah, there's 100 million homeowners in this country, about 50 million with mortgages, and they supposedly pay themselves a rent. That becomes a pretty big number, right? And that's added into GDP. And there's other problems with GDP having to do with real GDP, and that was adjusted for inflation. If you keep inflation numbers down, if you underestimate your inflation numbers, you overestimate your real GDP. So there's all kind of statistical measures that are done to minimize the rate of inflation, to dampen it, to smooth it out. We'll talk about that. Because they're going to come out with preliminary GDP numbers for the third quarter, and it's going to look like, whoa, things are looking pretty good. Oh, we're back. You know, V-shaped recovery, not. But they'll use those preliminary GDP numbers for that. You know, they'll say, oh, look, we grew at 33% annual rate in the third quarter. Yeah, we collapsed at 33% in the second quarter annual rate, but we're back 33. Okay, so we recovered everything. Yeah, but look, 33% on a $21 trillion GDP is wiping out $7 trillion. You're down to 13, 14 trillion. Right? Oh, third quarter, you're starting with 13, 14 trillion, and a 33% is really about $4 to $5 trillion up. You're still $2 to $3 trillion down. That's not a V shape. That's the first leg of a W shape. And the economy, we see, is in real trouble in a whole number of fronts. Well, let's just take jobs. Airlines laying off 35,000, right? Disney, 28,000. Macy's, 4,000. Cineworld, you know, major movie theater chain, 40,000. Allstate, 4,000. Scores of companies laying off 1,000 to 2,000 scores out there. These are large companies. You know, these aren't furloughs. These are permanent layoffs. I could go down a long list. At the same time, we got over 100,000 restaurants permanently closed already. You know, there's, what, 600,000-700,000 restaurants in this country. The National Federation of Independent Business says that 21% of the roughly 30 million small businesses in this country could go under, are going under, could go under. You know, that's 6 million. 6 million small businesses by next year if they don't do something. Millions, 10 million at least being evicted from their rents already. Inner city, the malls are in big trouble. Big box retails, JCPenney, another retail, 70,000 jobs, right? Malls are in trouble, going bankrupt everywhere, big and small. Big box retail companies, Penny's, Kohl's, Lord & Taylor, Brooks Brothers, Macy's, Neiman Marcus, all laying off in the thousands. Big office buildings in inner cities, New York, San Francisco, are emptying out. They're emptying out. Yeah. 36,000 franchise companies, businesses, gyms, salons, and so forth, closed already, according to the International Franchising Association. Small businesses everywhere, permanently closed. New York Times even said more than 850,000 have already closed permanently. That's New York Times here on October 8th. Yeah. I mean, it's even seeping into the mainstream press. Look, 1.5 million people since August are filing for the first time for unemployment benefits. 1.5 million a week. Every week. The last job numbers only cover through September 12th. So 4.5 million more have been laid off since then. Doesn't show up in those numbers, you see. 1 million a week are exhausting their unemployment benefits. So we got 1.5 million coming in one side of the black box, and we got 1 million going out the other side exhausting their benefits. I've seen estimates that at least 4 million, 4.3 million of two paycheck families have had one of the earners have to quit in order to take care of kids' education, K through 6 education. They're becoming the teachers, you see, and it's not working. It's a big failure, this education from home thing. And by the way, that 4.3 million does not show up as unemployed because they quit, you see. If you quit, you're not considered unemployed. According to the way the government estimates it, you may be jobless, but you're not unemployed. And you can't get benefits, of course. And no one's saying anything about those who still have jobs who've come back from furloughs. How many hours of work per week are they actually having? You know, they're coming back part-time and temp. Last month alone, 216,000 layoffs by state and local governments. 216,000. It's going to be every month more and more. And then, of course, the 300,000-400,000 census taker jobs at the federal level are going away soon. I mean, that's the picture. That's the picture of unemployment getting worse. It's getting worse. And the benefits, unemployment insurance, is disappearing. Businesses know this, you know, and they're getting worried. And that's why they're putting pressure on Trump. You know, as I said, a lot of calls, I'm sure, from Chambers of Commerce and Business Roundtable and CEOs. Get something passed, you know. And that caused Trump to reverse position again. And finally throw the hot potato into Mitch McConnell's lap. We'll see if Mnuchin and Pelosi can agree on their $1.92 trillion compromise deal. If the Democrats are smart, they would agree to it and throw it into the Senate and make the Senate look bad. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe they like their buddies in the Senate, so they'd rather make Donald look bad and not agree. And that's where we stand in terms of fiscal stimulus negotiations, past and present, future. We're going to need more than $2 trillion. I'm telling you right now. You know, since March, I've been saying it's going to take $4 trillion. They've only spent $1.3 trillion in the March CARES Act. Yes. Yeah, it called for $3 plus trillion, but it's not been spent because half of it was loans to medium and big business, and they haven't taken up those loans. For reasons I've talked about here, they don't need it, except for, you know, those companies in the really depressed areas, which, you know, are, you know, airlines, travel, leisure, hospitality, entertainment, you know, services of various kinds. They're the ones who really need it. They're crashed. They're in depression. Right? And now malls and office buildings coming and defaults. You know, increasingly, Fed Chairman Powell is worried that we're going to have defaults and bankruptcies, already rising, by the way. Business bankruptcies rose 78% from last year this time. Yeah. So it's a situation where we're going to need at least another couple of $1 trillion after the new year begins. But they better pass something now, or they're never going to get to the new year. Okay, that's it. We'll keep this story going next week.